All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order. And first of all, thank you for everyone that came today. That is really, we really appreciate that because this is an important presentation. So with that, we'll, I'm calling the meeting to order and we're going to have roll call.
Yeah, Director Abedy?
Yes.
Cecil Banks? Russ Kronberg?
Here.
Chris Engel.
Here.
Rebecca Ivins. Emily Kilroy.
Here.
B. Lopisto Kirtley.
Here.
Jennifer Lyon. Jip.
Here.
Jay Pun.
This meeting is being recorded. Please press 1 if you have your consent to be recorded.
Okay. Danny Shea, you walked in just in time.
Here.
Jay Simple.
Here.
Brad Yule.
Here.
Juan Diego Wade, John Wharton.
Here.
Thanks.
And Mayor Wade did text us saying that he would be late, but he is coming. Okay. Next, we have Civitas' presentation on tourism improvement districts.
Yep.
Give it to Russ.
Again, thanks for everybody for being here. Kind of as I prepped us a little bit, but she will do a much better job. We've invited Tiffany Gallagher with Civitas to come give us a little bit more information about what a TID is, how she's been helping other destinations with these, and how they've seen the successes of them, and how it could positively impact Charlottesville. And then I just wanted to point out in the public here, we have Eric Terry, who is the president and CEO for the Virginia Restaurant Lodging Tourism Association here with us. He also has been influential and helpful to Richmond and some of the other Virginia counties. Richmond rolled it out, as we talked about, and then some of the other counties are going through it currently as well in Virginia. And so he might be able to chime in from that level as well. So with that, I will turn it over to Ms. Gallagher to talk to us a little bit more about that.
Hi everyone, thank you for having me. It's a great opportunity. My name is Tiffany Gallagher, Vice President of Civitas Advisors. We are the nation's only firm that specializes in the establishment of special benefit investment districts particular to the tourism industry. So our work is particular in helping destinations establish supplemental revenue streams to generate additional demands for their businesses. We worked with Eric, and we'll talk a bit about this in a moment, and I'm going to ask Eric to really contribute to this conversation as he's had just as much to do with this as I have. In 2020, it became apparent that the industry was in need of a new mechanism to provide additional resources to the industry, and so we partnered with Eric and his staff to draft the enabling legislation that ultimately was passed in 2021 to allow for destinations to form TIDs if they so choose. So essentially a tool for your toolbox if you decide to pick it up. As was mentioned, Richmond has done this successfully. I will talk about their case study and their timeline. And we do have a couple of other areas that are very seriously looking at this. We do have an area in Fairfax County that is under contract for establishment of a TID, and we have a couple of other areas that are very seriously considering it. So it is relatively new to Virginia, but is not new to the United States. And so what I'd love to do is just provide to you some education on the mechanism, how it works, and how it has worked across the country. As a bit of background, my background, although I worked for a legal consulting firm now, I was a hotel operator for many years and led a large convention center hotel, ultimately did a lot of civic work, was on the board of the DMO where I live and work, lived in Syracuse, New York, was president of the Hotel Association in this area. I currently sit on the board of directors for the New York State Hotel Association as well. So I've got some relevant experience on the other side of the table to offer as well. So I'm going to share my screen, go through a few slides, and then of course, if we have opportunity for Q&A, we can do that. Just as some background, this is news to you all, but foundationally for our discussion today, there are typical sources of funding for destination marketing organizations. On the private side, we have memberships and partnerships, grant revenues, event revenues, contract services, so where the VMO is professional in space, they can provide services, licensing and naming rights, selling t-shirts, hats, etc. On the public side, and the heavier side of funding for most DMOs, we have federal state grants. We became acquainted with that well during the COVID-19 pandemic. Untethered tax allocations and tethered tax allocations. Untethered tax allocations are taxes like sales tax. They're not necessarily tied to any particular industry, and they are widely imposed. Tethered taxes are taxes like bed tax. They are tied to an industry, generally intended to provide benefit to that industry as well. Property tax and sales tax increment financing. These are mechanisms. You're probably familiar with the property tax increment financing model. They're usually used for capital improvements. Usually that mechanism takes growth in property tax for a defined geography, takes that growth and funnels it back to buy down the debt of a capital improvement or a program, so that's not a new levy, it uses an existing levy. Sales tax increment financing, same idea, but with sales tax, it's a little bit more rare to see this mechanism used. I think there's only a couple of states that actually have legal vehicles for that. We do see this as an opportunity for the industry moving forward. And then we have assessments. Assessments are what a tourism improvement district is. It is different. Legal underpinnings are different for assessments than they are taxes, in that there's a legal required benefit back to the payer in proportion to the amount that they contribute. That is a legal requirement, not just statutory with this law that we are going to talk about, but it's also the legal underpinning of the assessment itself. And so it makes it a secure model, which is why it has become more and more attractive to the industry. These two concepts really were the beginnings of the evolution of the TID, the Sufficiency and Stability of Tourism Destination Marketing Funding. Sufficiency being that our industry is probably one of the only industries where our organizations are funded by an allocation and not necessarily proportionate to the amount of economic impact they're expected to produce or they do produce. Because generally speaking, say corporations like AT&T or Coca-Cola, their marketing budgets are generally proportionate to the amount of impact that they're looking to bring to their businesses. With us, usually our funding stream is an allocation from the government and doesn't have a whole lot to do with the economic impact. Stability of the model is also relative to government. Government has the complete control in most cases over the primary funding model for destination marketing organizations, and that's true, of course, the bed tax model. And so a group of hotel owners in West Hollywood, California, in 1990 identified the need for supplemental funding above and beyond the bed tax model. And that was to drive more demand and produce enough economies of scale in order to be able to impact their businesses. And they identified the business improvement district model as a good way to do that. The BID model, if you're familiar with the BID model, has been around since the 60s. All 50 states have business improvement districts, essentially a public-private partnership where the private property owners get together, decide they will self-assess themselves for a new funding stream for services that the government does not provide that they need to put in place for themselves. And so the hotels in West Hollywood, California said, hey, we'd love to do that, but we'd love to do that just for hotels, not for every property in the area. And so they formed the very first tourism business improvement district in 1990. It works a bit different than a bid. And so if you're familiar with bids, you know that they're property-based assessments. They are a line item, essentially, in the property tax bill. They come out of the pocket of the property tax owner. They're generally difficult to put into place, but again, a private-public partnership where the private sector has a great deal of control over the expenditures and the impact to their properties. In a TID, it works differently, and the statute that was written and passed in the Commonwealth of Virginia is a business-based assessment. Business-based assessment in that the assessment is relative to the transaction
and the benefit of the assessment has to be received back in the same way that it's levied. So the benefit has to be received back by transaction as well. In hotels, that would look like room night sales. And so the also, the assessment can be passed on to the customer. It's different than a bid. In a bid, that is not the case. And so the tourism business pays the assessment by collecting that via their guest room folio. So it's a line item on the guest room folio. It looks a bit like sales and bed tax on that receipt. Separate line, collected by the business, remitted to the local government, and then managed by destination marketing organization. Most business improvement districts, when they form a new nonprofit. That new nonprofit has a board of directors that is composed of their property owners, usually by majority or higher. In this case, we have a professional entity that already does the work around execution of a plan for a TID, and that's the destination marketing organization. So in most cases, the TID appoints the existing destination marketing organization as the management entity for the district, and there is a creation of a governing body that is particular to the TID that usually is a committee of the board of directors of the DMO. Where there are exceptions to that is where the DMO is a government entity, then a new nonprofit is established and a contractual arrangement is put together between the DMO and that board. We do use the government here through a statute so that we have a set of rules that cannot be deviated from. And that creates a mechanism that is fair and equitable, unlike, let's say, membership models where we might have some folks pay in and some folks not and all benefit. In this mechanism, all that are part of a district and will benefit have to be a part of it for the term of the district. There is no free riders. It's a transparent mechanism, and as a bonus, it is a pass-through to the consumer. We like to delineate differences between bed taxes and TIDs because this industry is a bit blessed and a bit cursed by the bed tax model. So we have, because we have a bed tax model, folks sometimes see this potentially as an additional bed tax. And so we like to, in the beginning, draw out the differences for the group. Bed taxes have no defined term, generally in place in perpetuity. There's no legal requirement to benefit those that pay in. So even though we might have a legislated intent or directive, there's actually no legal underpinning that requires the money to directly benefit those that pay in. And so because of that, that money can be diverted or legislated and changed. The primary source of funding for our DMO is usually the bed tax, which requires quite a bit of annual effort and resources to retain our allocation or continue to retain our bed tax revenue. Because of that, there is somewhat an inability for long-term planning. I'll also say that usually the bed tax is not enough in order for us to be able to generate the economies of scale needed for our businesses, and so not proportionate to the economic impact expected. Tourism Improvement Districts and Assessment have a specific term and plan. There's a guiding document that is put together and required by law that outlines the parameters of the district. That district plan has the assessment rate budget, the list of authorized expenditures, so the how the money can be spent cannot be deviated from, the boundaries, geographic boundaries for the district, what types of businesses would be in the district, so characteristics are defined, and then the governing body for the district is outlined in the plan and the term. These districts cannot be in place forever. They have a requirement of term at the outset. In your state, it does vary from state to state, but in your state, 10 years is the max initial term and 20 years upon renewal. There has to be an approval process by those who would be paying into the district in order to put one of these in place. There's a petition process that is required by law that requires over 50% of those that would contribute more than 50% in assessment revenues to sign petitions in order for the jurisdiction to see it on their agenda. So that's part of the process. And so what that means is the larger the contribution of revenue in assessment dollars by a business, the higher the weight of the vote. So that has to be approved through petition process, and ultimately it does have to be approved through a notice and hearing process at the municipal level. It is legally, TIDs are legally accountable to their district plan. So that district plan that I outlined, all of those parameters must be adhered to through the term of the district and cannot be deviated from unless there is a modification process. There is a legal requirement to benefit. So tourism businesses have to benefit in proportion to the amount they contribute. And it is a stable and protected investment for the long term. The term and the district is governed by the plan and not by elected officials or any change in leadership. And so the integrity of the district is maintained for the term. Because of that, it's a very attractive model, generally speaking, to both hotels and to elected officials. We do know that destinations that are well-resourced and have multiple streams of revenue fare better in economic downturns than those that do not. We have data to support that with previous financial crises, Great Financial Crisis, 9/11, and of course the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a study that we did with Tourism Economics. You're welcome to scan this QR code. It will bring you to our website. There's a full study here, but what we did in 2021 was take a look at the top 100 destinations in the country. At the time, of the top 100 destinations in the country, 71 did not have TIDs, the 29 did. You'll see the list of 29 cities that did have TIDs on the left-hand side. We pinned those TID cities against the 71 that did not. And there's a lot of other findings in this study, but we pulled out a few key, and this is really no surprise. On average, the destinations that had TIDs produced 2.1% less in hotel room demand and 4.5% in hotel room revenue. And it makes a lot of sense because the additional revenue stream with TIDs is, well, additional. But in addition to that, there's no staff, there's no leases, there's no expenses, and the money is almost 100% infused into room generation activities. And because of that, it produces incremental and new demand. When you do that, you also produce more TID revenue. And so there's a compounding effect on your ability to continue to impact the destination. Here, we could talk a bit about the process for how the TID mechanism came to be in Virginia. And I'm not sure if Eric wants to speak to the legislative process here, but he had firsthand in this process.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Obviously, you know, the pandemic was devastating to the hotel industry here, but it was also devastating to our DMOs who lost a lot of funding, some of which was tied to the bed tax and whatnot. And so, among other things, we were able to get some federal funds out of the ARPA that helped some of our DMOs, but we knew that was going to be a temporary solution. And so when we started pursuing this, we really saw it as a longer-term solution to, you know, providing funding for DMOs on a consistent basis. And so understanding the relationship between the collection of bed tax and what happens there is where we kind of started with this. And we actually had very good support for this. We had a lot of destinations whose leadership, they were supportive of it, BML and BACO as well. And so when
they don't know what that is.
Sorry?
Can you say the acronyms out?
Oh, Virginia Municipal League and the Virginia Association of Counties, both of those organizations, you know, kind of represent the respective members. So we decided to, you know, when we started pursuing this, we worked with Civitas on the legislation because they've done it in other states. And so we, you know, created a framework for that. And honestly, it passed much easier than we thought it would, but we did see a lot of momentum behind it. And of course, obviously, then we started the process in Richmond, and I think Tiffany can kind of walk you through that.
Thanks, Eric.
So, thank you, Eric. In Richmond, we began education sessions. I think we began the process in April of 2022. Ultimately, the district became effective in July of last year, 2023. Six jurisdictions, so a pretty heavy lift. And so there were, I think, four counties and one city and one town. And we actually have one town, the sixth town, which will be formally forming the 6th district in that region this month. There, we had to wait on that one because there was a hotel that wasn't built, and we needed to have that hotel built in order to have their petition count. And so we started working in May, education sessions, planning efforts, and we had a great group of hotel leaders from the region contribute to that plan. Eric was part of that process as well, where they put together their district plan, and I'll show you some of those elements in just a moment. And we began to socialize that plan and continue to add inputs from the industry throughout that process, ultimately moving through the approval processes in the spring of 2023. So they established a June 2023 assessment as 2% of the sales on the hotel room night. Their budget is approximately $8.3 million in collections for their TID. First district, of course, in Virginia. These are the districts. So I say districts because there's a couple of ways you can form these districts. You can use, of course, one municipality could form a district, and the boundaries can fall within that municipality. It could be the boundaries, could be the municipality itself, but you could also draw circles or a defined geography within the municipality. If you want to have more than one municipality, you can have a lead jurisdiction. Lead jurisdiction would take the lead, and the other jurisdictions would have to pass consent resolutions to give that lead jurisdiction the authority to lead the formation. So you could have one geographic bound that goes over multiple municipalities, or in this case, these municipalities decide, or localities decided to form individual districts and join them with one governance, so that governance being the DMO. And so they're actually legally separate districts, but they have identical plans. Their plans are exactly the same for every district, and their terms are also exactly the same. They will all end at the same time. They have in their district plan programs to leverage new facilities development. So one of the biggest motivators, they have a couple of sports facilities that are being developed and have been developed. And they need additional resources to be able to promote those facilities. They needed additional resources for incentives for meeting planners. They want to expand their drive market and invest, I think, as an additional $1 million in that effort. And the hotels wanted to see some programming around workforce development. So that was also embedded into their district plan. This is an overview of this district so far. They've been up and running for 7-ish months. I think it's been going very well. They just started to really establish a good revenue stream and start to invest that. They took the first 4 or 5 months to establish the structure of the governance as well for the district, which is a committee of the board of the DMO. Across the country, we do have 210 TIDs in 23 states. So we've got very small TIDs. We have one TID that raises only $10,000 a year and has one business in it. So one business assessing itself for its own marketing. And then on the high side, we have San Diego, California, raising $43 million every year for their effort. That district started roundly 10 years ago with an $8 million budget, and has grown that budget to $43 million. So it's obviously a very successful district. Most districts now are using a percentage of room revenue as the assessment methodology, but you can also use a dollar amount per occupied room or per transaction. We do have more folks using percentage because you can organically capture the impact of your investment, and of course, through ADR growth, organically capture the revenue there as well. Blue states are the states that have active tourism improvement districts, and the orange slash yellow states are those that are forming districts or have enabling legislation that might be enacted. And so you can see around you that you have you definitely have some destinations that have TIDs. Baltimore has a TID, Louisville, Kentucky has a TID, Lexington it has been working on forming a TID. Memphis has a TID. Mobile, Alabama. We have two other destinations in formation in Alabama now. We have Montgomery and Florence. We have an active TID in Tampa, Florida, and another one forming in Seminole County, which is North Orlando now. So we have quite a bit of activity across the country. Now, when I started this work, it was about 8 years ago, there was only one TID on the East Coast, and that was in Newark, New Jersey. Legislation, it's not always necessary to pass legislation. Sometimes the state business improvement district law is enough. In your state, we did need to draft a new law. So this is just legislation particular to TIDs and only since 2020. As a side note, California was the first state. They use their bid law. They don't have TID-specific legislation. As a side note, and they have over 100 TIDs in the state of California. The checkmark states are those who have passed enabling laws, and the states on the right-hand side have drafted enabling legislation or intend to draft enabling legislation. We have quite a bit of activity in Georgia right now, and also South Carolina. And Georgia is interesting because Georgia has a really high all-in bed tax burden on their tax receipt. They have a $5 per occupied room fee that is associated to transportation. Most destinations in Georgia have over 20% on the guest room. And so we've got three destinations, two under contract and another interested in looking at this and then also drafting legislation. And if I could guess, the reason behind this is that the industry really wants to take some level of control over the total amount on their tax receipt. They're looking to fill the perceived gap that would be left in the space on the guest room receipt. How do you do it on the ground? And so I mentioned that it took us about 14 months in Richmond to do the process. And I actually think that was quite fast considering there were six jurisdictions. Normally one jurisdiction, I'm gonna say normally, it would be 10 to 12 months. We would begin with a steering committee. So we would establish a steering committee. That steering committee would be composed of leaders of the businesses, generally by size and geography within the destination, that would contribute to development of a plan. And that it's not just the stakeholders particularly, but also it would be leaders from the DMO and any other contributors that you think might be helpful. Once there's a plan developed, that plan is brought out to the community for socialization and contribution until we have a plan that we feel all folks would support, including the locality. From there, there is a petition process. Petition process, I mentioned, signatures of hotel owners or their representatives must be signed in excess of 50% of contribution of assessment dollars in order to move it through the municipal process at the local level, which would be the final step. It would be a public notice, public hearing, and then it would be seen for a vote of the legislative body of the locality or localities that would be involved. And finally, from there, would be execution of the plan. A couple case studies, Mobile, Alabama. Mobile, Alabama formed their district in 2020, all lodging businesses with 40 or more rooms. So their programs and their list of authorized expenditures are particular to benefit hotels of 40 rooms or more. They have $1 per occupied room. They're moving through their renewal process in the coming year. They might be changing the assessment model, raising roundly $3 million a year. This is some of their listed authorized activities through their district plan. On the right-hand side, it is managed by a separate nonprofit that is contracted with the DMO for execution. Steamboat Springs, Colorado. This has been in place since 2004, so it's been in place for quite some time, 2% on nightly accommodations, 2024 proposed budget, roundly $3 million. They formed their district from a support airline service for guests and locals, leading marketing and program management and operations. And that concludes the presentation. I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
Before we finish up, two things I want to point out. One of which is the way the legislation is crafted and the way that we structured this, it does not allow the jurisdictions who are currently providing funding to their DMO to reduce that funding. They have to maintain that level of funding. They're not able to do it because obviously we didn't want to have a situation where we formed a TID and then the funds that the jurisdictions are providing goes away. So that was one important fact. The other thing that we did in Richmond, and the way that Richmond is structured, is they are also reserving some of their funds for the payment for athletic events. They've built a number of new athletic facilities there, and the rights fees for, say, they have an A-10 basketball tournament there this week, and that costs X dollars to sponsor that or to get that moved to that jurisdiction. So there's a lot of money, that's, especially in Richmond, where they're doing sports tourism is such a big part of what they're doing, but the rights fees were significant. So they actually are not spending all their money each year, but putting it into a reserve fund so that they can fund those future events that they want to try to do. And it's not just limited to sports, it could be other sorts of things like that that you want to do. But, you know, it's an interesting structure the way that they sort of approach it.
Tiffany, have any of the TIDs or districts used their funds for physical improvements in their communities?
Yes. We're seeing a lot more of that. So Lafayette, Louisiana just formed a district in 2023, and they have formed their district to generate enough resources to embark on the possibility of a sports facility. And so they are using the assessment money to do feasibility studies. They also authorized the district to be able to purchase land, and then also their district is authorized to finance bonds. And so if there is a construction of a sports facility, they would then, they would have to renew their district under different terms, but they could use the money to finance the bonds. In Seminole County, Florida, right now we're forming a district for sports facility, exclusively for a sports facility, a $65 million indoor sports facility. The expansion of the Sacramento Ballroom at the Convention Center was financed through a TID. There was a TID in place for marketing in the city, and then there's now a sub-TID for the hotels that are around the Convention Center to fund that funded the expansion of that ballroom. And there's several more from there, but the short answer is yes.
Gotcha. But in Richmond's case, they wrote it just for purposes like this, just for marketing, not for physical improvements.
I mean, they already had a convention.
Yeah.
They had a funding mechanism for that that was already created, so they didn't have to do what this is.
Right.
I'd be interested to know, like, what has been, like, I'm hearing, like, the uses of the funds for, like, hotels, like, sporting places, like, as far as, like, visual arts and culture, maybe even, like, public art. Is there any benefit for those sections of our community?
So investment in destination development is sometimes a facet. So one element of these districts that is important to always keep in mind is the money has to be spent to directly benefit those that pay in. And so that can be a facet of the plan, but it could never be the whole plan, if that makes sense. So it could be a supporting element. We do have districts that have community type programs and granting programs embedded into their districts, but the primary focus, of course, has to be measurable and benefit back. We do know that folks do not come to our destinations to just visit hotels. They come to visit the destination. And so investment in the destination is okay. You just have to balance it in a way that you just have to make sure that it keeps the integrity of the intention of the district and adheres to the law as well.
I feel like an example, I think, that I've heard, whether it was you or some others, talk about is some of these TIDs or some of these destinations use them to fund festival, like art festivals or different types of events and things like that that support the local community in those areas, but then also hopefully drive travelers to come into town and engage and then stay in the hotels and just helps in all vibrancy of tourism. Is that fair?
It is fair. A vibrant community is the reason why folks come to visit. And so there, that piece of it has to, again, it just has to be balanced with the legal component.
Yeah.
I have a question. Can you explain, because in your presentation, it seemed like everybody was very welcoming.
Can you explain some resistance that you have gotten to the creation of TIDs? And was there a commonality in the resistance?
Yes, I can explain. There's not a lot of resistance, usually. If the only natural competitor to a TID formation is the desire to raise money in a competing space. And so if there is a desire to raise taxes in other ways, that is the only natural competitor. Once hotels understand the legal benefit that is derived back to their hotels, that they voted in, that they're part of the governing process from a legal perspective, hotels are generally very supportive, and not just very supportive, but usually advocates. And I think Eric's presence and advocacy on this front is probably representative of that. In terms of local government, this solves a lot of trouble, not just for the hotels, but also for the government. This is able to fill gaps and solve problems and allows the industry to self-impose a levy that solves problems for their industry. They don't have to come to the government as much to ask for those to be solved. So usually this is something that's embraced by the community as a whole, unless there is another priority that already exists.
The only comment that I would have on that is that the discussions that we have had around state are, when you have a current tax structure in place that's already at a pretty high level, once you start sort of approaching, you know, the higher end of that, call it 20% or whatever, the hotel industry does push back a little bit in saying that. The other thing that we did in Richmond, which is done in the other ones, you saw, I think, Mobile, is we did set a cap at hotels who had 41 rooms or more, because we didn't feel like those hotels below 41 rooms are going to benefit as much as hotels above that number. So, you know, that's really the only thing we encountered at Richmond, was just that sort of understanding of that. But like I said, you know, I think the sensitivity of the hotel industry is, once you sort of get a certain level of tax, it becomes almost untenable to attracting business groups and things like that.
And are new constructions in the TID required to be part of it, or do they have the option?
No, they have the option. I mean, the legislation does allow you to do something, as Russ pointed out, for a capital type project. So, you know, let's say a convention center or something.
No, I mean, if a new owner comes in, new hotel.
Well, once it's in place and the current owner, it transfers with the new owner.
A brand new hotel being constructed.
They would be required to be a part of it. Yeah, because again, it ends up being passed by the local government, whoever that entity is, and so it does transfer to the new property or whoever does that. So
any entity doing a site inspection to determine whether they wanted to build a new hotel, that would be required knowledge for them.
Right. Yeah, okay. I would say I've had some discussions with actually some of your owners of hotels here in Charlottesville, but I've also spoken to them all over, and there's so many of these around the country now that most of the owners who have multiple properties in different jurisdictions, like the Draftsman owner has a hotel in Baltimore that's already in the TID, and so we're finding that there's pretty good acceptance by some of the ownership groups today.
Tiffany, you had said, and I may have jotted it down wrong, but something around that generally the management entity is a CACBB or the CBB, unless CBB is a government. And I don't know if you have a comment on would that be us?
Yeah.
Are you a nonprofit? Are you a 501c6?
No. We're
government. You're quasi. Okay. Then the requirement would be that a separate nonprofit would have to be established.
And so I had a follow-up related to that. So is there a potential for misalignment between the CACBB, in this case, and the newly formed nonprofit in terms of, you would think there would be natural alignment in marketing, but there could be a possibility where there's not. So have you encountered any of those situations, and what would be your comment?
The short answer is no, we have not. Because the new nonprofit doesn't have staff. The new nonprofit is a board, and that board then contracts with the DMO to execute the plan. There's already, we have had in Illinois comes to mind. There was I will say, a trust between the industry and the DMO is key, really key. And so if that doesn't exist, there can be pushback from the industry on that. So I have had hotels in Illinois contacted us directly and said, we want to form a TID, and we want to form a TID, and we want to have a separate nonprofit, and we want to do it ourselves. It was not successful. And the reason why is because the jurisdiction has to approve it. And the jurisdiction did not want that misalignment, to your point. And so, could it happen legally? The framework could allow for it. Politically, I have not seen it happen. And it's not usually an issue. I would say of the, my gosh, of the hundreds of projects that I come across, I've encountered that sort of scenario twice. Neither one was successful.
Chris, that's also one of the reasons that we're sort of involved, is that, we can be the bridge between the hotel community and the DMO. And, I jokingly say when we have these six meetings in Richmond, I say, if Richmond Region Tourism wanted to sponsor only quilt shows, which don't generate a lot of income for hotels, then we would probably, crawl foul and say that's not a good investment for something like this. So I think, that's kind of where we sort of help with the process of sort of making sure that there is alignment. And I was incredibly impressed by how Richmond came together with that. Again, it was comfort with the Richmond Region Tourism and how they were working already. So yeah, I mean, there is the potential there, but I think it's pretty remote.
So I have a question regarding, you said that the TID does need municipal agreement, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and that's, if it becomes a nonprofit, it needs municipal agreement. Municipal meaning city or county.
That's right.
Okay. Next thing, I've heard mentioned several times a sports facility. So if the organization that's not interested in that, some other things that we've discussed here would be a convention center, maybe a standalone convention center, just throwing that up, or refurbishing, frankly, the downtown mall that is now a historic district that I think would really, really bring in a lot of tourism also.
It's a possibility. It would have to be part of the district plan. Folks would have to all agree on it, and you would have to be able to prove the benefit to all those that would contribute.
Right, right. I'm throwing that out, wondering whether or not that would be a benefit or a sports.
You can only ask two people at this table that question.
Okay.
I mean, it's the hoteliers, right?
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's these are all the things that we've talked about, that some of these things might come up in our master plan, right? Come out of the tourism master plan, and at some point we're gonna also go, these are the objectives of the master plan. How are we gonna fund some of this, right, within our current model? And I think that's where this whole discussion started, is that hopefully this additional funding could help us start to check off the priorities that are going to inevitably come up in this master plan. And it could be from physical improvements. We've talked a lot about workforce issues and development, and you've heard them say that they're going to do that. I think that's part of Richmond's plan. I think I've even heard transportation in some districts has been drawn in, that they have helped bus routes or had added funding to the local transportation company to add bus lines to certain areas to benefit hotels, restaurants, other businesses as well.
Baltimore used it to fund increased security in that downtown, Inner Harbor area, because they were having it was hurting their visitor base, because they were concerned about security. So yeah, they used it for a lot of. I was going back to the sports thing. There is a huge escalation in sports tourism right now around the state.
There's a new facility that was built down in Virginia Beach, a new one that opened in Henrico. Williamsburg is about to build one. And so a lot of that is driven off of youth sports, but some of it is off of other types of things. And so, you know, there is, you know, I'm not a big advocate for building more of those because we're probably about to get built out of the state. But there is a potential, let's say, if UVA wanted to go after the ACC tournaments or one of those sort of things, to provide some incremental funding on things like that, or things that might be happening on the campus already that you could partner with. And again, UVA would say, look, I can only fund so much, and we need to fund incremental. And those are big drivers of hotel occupancy.
Well, we've had, just here at the resort, the NCAA golf and tennis, we've put in bids, and those typically require either the host site or the host college to have to put in money. And when it ended up coming down to is UVA didn't want to put in the extra $100,000 or whatever the cost was, I forget at the time. But those are 26 teams of people traveling in for a week at a time, a lot of rooms that not even our site could host. It was just things like that, I guess is what you're saying. They could be other university sport-related type things. We don't have to build a facility.
Don't just focus on sports. I mean, it could be a band competition. It could be, going back to the arts, it could be an art company. But a lot of different things that are going on. And, you know, the fastest growing tourism segment is that of, I call it youth travel. My son plays college rugby, and I travel all over the country to watch him play rugby. So that's really a big growth thing that's happening. And, you know, people, that's the way they're vacationing.
Yeah. Eric, do you have any, it is Eric, right? I'm sorry. Do you have any information or impact on how the creation of the TID has affected the workings of the CBB in Richmond?
There's a mid-year report. We can get you a copy of that and share that with you. I mean, it's really well done. They just released it, I think, back in December. And that was kind of a six-month report for them in terms of the way they've done it. You know, they've done a number of different things, some of which were supporting a group. You know, one of the challenges you have on a hotel basis is a group comes to you and says, hey, we'd like to book this group with you, but we need, like Chris said, we need about, you know, $25,000 or whatever to move to Charlottesville as opposed to going to Norfolk or somewhere else. And they've been funding some of those kind of programs. They've been doing a number of things. I think the A-10 women's tournament that's in Richmond this week got some of that funding, and that's filling up most of the hotels in Richmond. So.
But that's from the what's the impact been on the CBB in Richmond?
Not a lot, because they had some existing programs, things that initially that they did. They, you know, like any DMO, you only have so much money to spend. And what typically happens is, you know, you stop at advertising in Washington, D.C., and you can't afford Philadelphia, or you can't afford Baltimore, or you can't afford Washington or Baltimore or Boston or something like that. So what they did is they just sort of pushed that envelope out, and they were focused on what their Richmond's problem was. They were full almost every weekend. Every Saturday night was their peak occupancy. Monday through Thursday was where their challenge was. So they spent money encouraging more Monday through Thursday travel last fall. And so there's, again, I'm trying to remember the report, but I'm pretty sure they had a really good positive impact for that by funding that kind of program. So it can be a lot of different ways that you do it.
But I think, for instance, I know Courtney gets a lot of requests from a lot of our nonprofit festivals and different events, and she unfortunately has to tell most of them no, or I can only give you $1,000 or whatever her allocations are. Part of the plan could be that we're going to allocate X amount of dollars per year to helping do some of that, which supplements some of her efforts or asks that are already being done currently on the CBB, you know, that she feels terrible about. I know, I've been a part of a couple of the emails, but she has to say no because she doesn't have the money.
On the budget allocation question, does this mean we would have to approve two separate budgets in that way because this money has to be spent specifically for the benefit of this group versus the current budget? Like, how does that work in terms of, like, are they different pots of money or is it one budget, just multiple sources?
question.
Yeah, it could be either. It depends ultimately on the end product of the TID. So if you have, so for example, we've got a TID in Rhode Island that is, or Tampa's probably a really good example of this. So Tampa has a TID that's just the Ybor district. It's not the whole city of Tampa. And so they have it's a really relatively small district that has a really pointed focus. If it's regional, like Richmond's is, you don't necessarily need a separate budget. You would need to have an allocation of funds, and this money could be supercharged. What you would have to do is account for it differently. You want to make sure that money was recorded and the benefits were recorded separately. So there's no rules on it per se. I think it depends on how the money is going to be spent. Obviously, if it was for capital improvements, it would be accounted for completely differently. So I think it just depends.
I would think, if we're going to have a separate nonprofit board that is going to have some level of involvement and oversight, maybe it's not a ton, but I would almost think each year Courtney would put a budget together saying, this is the estimated TID funds for the coming year. This is our plan on how we, you know, accordance to the original plan, this is how we plan to spend it. Nonprofit board, do you approve? I mean, I don't know. Does that happen? I mean, that seems like the cleanest, like, so there isn't question about how things are being spent or monies are moved around or, you know, vice versa.
There's technical accounting, and then you can propose a financial marketing plan that's not necessarily a technical budget. Does that make sense?
So
it depends on how you frame it. But you're right. Usually, the destination marketing organization, as the professional, makes the recommendation on the spend of the funds and the impact, and the board then weighs in and ultimately approves it for execution.
Maybe just getting into the weeds a little bit about like technicality, but I just off that question. How does let's say we started like this year, like, let's say, just out of, like, 2024, we started, like, collecting funds. At what point in time does those funds become available to be able to be used? Like, do you, like, account for an entire year, and then so you're, like, a year ahead for it, or do you get to use it retroactively? I just wonder, sorry, I just asked because, like,
you can use the money as it comes. Yeah, so to your point, if you forecast that the TID's first year of budget will be $2 million. You, of course, don't get all $2 million the day you form the district. You have to bring it in as it's produced. You can spend the money as it comes in. Of course, you can only spend what you have, and it depends on what you're looking to spend the money on. If you're doing an incentive for a group that's not coming for two more years, then you can start to make commitments for larger amounts before you actually have the funds, because you will know that you will have the funds, and so you don't have to worry about the next year's allocation of budget. You know what's coming. So spending, again, the technical spending of it is subject to the activity, but I hope that answered the question.
Tiffany, I don't know if you have any examples of working with a situation like ours, which, you know, we're not like Richmond, we're not a 501c3 or 6, we're a government entity, mm-hmm. The county's the fiscal agent for this bureau. Have you set up any TIDs that are connected in that way, or is this kind of a hybrid?
Yes. No, it's not uncommon for there to be a tourism entity that's part of government. Louisville, their formation is like that. So they have, Louisville is technically part of government, and so there's a separate in that state, the structure of the law is such that there's like a quasi-governmental board that's set up by ordinance, which is completely separate. But yes, and that is a contractual arrangement between those two boards as far as how it's executed. But yes, we have done that. Seminole County, Florida, that we're forming a district now.
Okay.
Seminole County, almost all of the MLAs in Florida are government entities, and so there'll be a separate nonprofit established there. Or an appointed nonprofit. That's the other option.
Okay. So it can be done until another layer of complexity, potentially.
In our experience, we keep it very simple. So So it would function similarly to a committee of the board, except for they would create a separate nonprofit and there'd be contractual arrangement. But in terms of operations, it would look similar.
And then another question.
The DMO has most of the roles in operations in levies and the district.
My other question was in Richmond, and maybe there's another example in Virginia, but the specific role of the existing DMO in initiating the conversation and starting the process, what was that? Or
it was all them. They started. I will tell you that their board chair is a hotelier, a significant owner, and his interest was key in initiating. They contracted directly with us. The TID is authorized, once it's up and running, to reimburse the DMO for the expenses and formation. But yes, they initiated the process.
So in Richmond, the DMO paid you all to run the consulting arrangement?
Yeah. Chris, the Civitas' role was really in helping with the city and the county attorneys who wanted to again, that was kind of first step, making sure that they're comfortable with the language and how the formation would occur. And that's a lot of what Civitas does, is kind of works on the legal side of things and how you do that. But then Tiffany herself came in for the meetings with the hoteliers and some of the elected officials to get them comfortable with the concept of it, because that was really important. And RICO, actually, who was at the time was the chair of the RICO Board of Supervisors, he was one of the big advocates for it, and so he actually came to a lot of the meetings, as did I and Tiffany and Richmond Region Tourism kind of led that process. So that's the way those things occur. And we did six of those, so we did one in each jurisdiction, so the hoteliers who have operations there could get comfortable.
And the district plan, the plan for the district, that's done before the funding is coming in, so the CBB would be the entity that's sort of overseeing the creation of that plan, or the hoteliers are working on that on their own, facilitated with assistance from Civitas, or what are the mechanics of that plan?
So the plan that accompanies the formation ordinance, the district plan, management district plan, which is not a marketing plan. It is a district plan. So we want to make sure that we understand those are two things. So the list of authorized expenditures, the primary focus of the programming, the assessment rate, the budget, the governance, the geography, that's the district plan. That piece is required. That piece accompanies the petition that ultimately the hotel sign on. That becomes local law for the term of the district, accompanies the formation ordinance at the formation time. Post-formation, the financial marketing plan would have to be created, and it would have to fall in line with that district plan. That financial marketing plan is created by the DMO and is ultimately ratified by the board of the TID and executed on.
And the district plan, I think maybe to your question, is a steering committee put together that is hotels, some possibly folks from our board here. It's a it's a collaborative group that's put together. It's not just the hotel people driving that plan. It's not just the DMO driving that plan. It's a collaborative approach.
The DMO has to agree. They're going to execute the plan. Locality has to pass the plan. So putting a plan together with all folks at the table is the best scenario.
Right.
So that is how we do it.
So my question is about that plan, because I think that's pivotal in this whole thing, what's included in that plan. And so, I mean, to me, it can be, I think I would like for it to be as comprehensive as possible, because I think as hotel owners that people come here, they don't just stay in their hotel, they will go out to pretty much everything, and sometimes do multiple things. They might go to a winery in the county, come visit the downtown mall, go to you. So, can we have like a pretty comprehensive list, or we have to say, only three or four things?
Good question.
Yeah.
Great question. The district plan is relatively broad, generally calls out room night generation type activities, Obviously, if it was capital improvement, that would be different. But we call out general room regeneration activities. If the district is in place, let's say, for 10 years, you want to have enough flexibility to move and change with the marketplace. So having a rigid set, you can have a rigid set of authorized expenditures. You could choose three things, but that would be challenging to spend funds over time. So we try to keep it as flexible as possible. But we try to toe the line of flexibility and making sure that there's boundaries in place as the money is, the integrity of the district is maintained.
And how often is that plan updated?
The district plan survives the term of the district. The annual financial marketing plan, it changes annually, or as often as you'd like.
That's why the original plan is probably pretty broad, because it allows, for each year it might be different, right? This year we might have a focus on the downtown mall. Next year it might be something else. That's really based on.
What they did is they did about four big buckets, and they said, okay, one bucket is going to be, they knew that the athletic facility in Henrico was being built, and they had an existing outdoor facility that was doing a lot. So they said, okay, we know this is one bucket that we need. We know we need to reserve this other bucket, and they're using reserve funds. But then they knew, hotel incentives, some actual, marketing, through marketing for leisure customers and whatnot. So they sort of put it into four or five big buckets, and then under that each year, they sort of decide, what the priorities are.
And who gets to decide, like, when there's two separate entities, where it's like?
Well, the entity that would be set up for this makes that determination for this.
And then they tell CACPB to institute which decision they make.
Correct. But it's a collaborative decision. It's not a, hey, we're going to do this and we're not going to talk to Courtney about it. That's not the way that works. that would be a dysfunctional way to do it.
Don't worry, your pretty little head about
it.
So I had a couple more questions about the, it's a lot of hotel, they change ownership. Does that have an impact? Does it follow the owner or the property?
So the district has a set of characteristics of benefiting properties, businesses, I should say. And so as long as a business falls in the characteristics, it is part of the district, regardless of ownership. And conversely, let's say you have a hotel that midterm sells and is now a long-term care facility, they automatically fall out of the district. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's part of the benefits of the district, is you don't have to manage a district like you would, say, a membership model. It's secure and in place for a period of time.
And my last question that I have is about the presentation. Okay, once this document's done, I imagine because it has to last so long, it's going to be a pretty robust document. If we have to get the hotel owners to sign it, do they have to get legal representation, or they're like, I don't know what I'm signing, and a few years later, I was like, well, it was a big document, I didn't know what I was signing. I'm just trying to, I don't know if it's a big document or is it so high bird's eye view that it's only a few pages because it's big buckets.
The hotel document that is not a big, big document. So that's relatively simple when they get it.
Right.
And they also, what we did is we presented the district plan to them. At the same time, we asked them to commit. So we actually had some mass meetings where we brought the folks in and say, here's what we're doing. I spoke to the owners in many cases because I've got relationships with a lot of the owners and whatnot. So they already kind of knew going in, what was expected that way.
Thank you.
I was wondering how... I'm sorry. Unfortunately, because I have a hard time, I have another appointment, I'm going to leave, but I'm going to turn everything over to Russ, so you're in good hands. And it's been very
about that. Thank you, B. Danny?
Well, yeah, I was just wondering how other businesses, industries could fit into this after it's established, how they can participate in a restaurant organizations and stuff. how they could happen.
Good question. Yeah, so we do have a minority, small amount of districts that have other types of industries in the district. And so usually where that is successful is, like we have one in South Lake Tahoe. South Lake Tahoe hotels, restaurants, and retail are all part of the district. And that works there because their primary economy is tourism, and all of those businesses understand that. Also, businesses are pretty engaged in the DMO widely. Most of the time, hotels are the most engaged audience with a destination marketing organization. Most economies are not solely tourism economies, and so I hope I'm getting to the meat of your question. Most TIDs are hotels because of those reasons, and it's pretty, you have to have petition signed. So kind of getting restaurants together, where you might have 20 hotels, you might have 1,000 restaurants, right? And so it's just a different ball of wax. Can you do it? Legally, we do have the ability to incorporate different types of businesses in districts in Virginia. The feasibility of it is complicated. If you establish a hotel district, can you bring in restaurants? You can. You would have to modify the district and go through the same process that you went through with the hotels, put together a district plan and have a petition process, et cetera. The benefit model is still required, so you would have to do programming that would directly benefit restaurants, which is sometimes different than the destination marketing effort. So I give you that because it's kind of complicated. The short answer is you can absolutely do it. But it's not done that often because it's complicated.
Well, I was thinking that initially having other people, other businesses participate in the program. But what about this advocating? You know, the board would just be representatives from the hotels, right? The nonprofit board. So it'd really just be...
Well, the board would be representative of the businesses in the district.
Programs.
Yeah.
So if you had a restaurant and hotel district, you would have representatives from both industries. But I speak about this from a hotel perspective because 99% of these districts are hotel-only districts. But it is possible. We actually have two wine districts in California, and we have... cannabis districts that are looking to form in California. We have everyone giggles at that. We also have, I think there's one golf district, and in Mammoth Lake, California, we have a ski and lodging district.
I think, Danny, where you're headed is like, if we set this up, how would you or Jay or others have input into where the money goes that it, as yeah. such that it also benefits your industries, not just the hotels, and I think how that happens is through this diverse board here that works with Courtney that says, this is the plan. I'm going to bring new shows to this area that's going to help drive people that want to come to Charlottesville, but can we get some extra marketing dollars towards these shows or whatever, right? Like, I think it's that annual dialogue around
right.
the plan.
To offer insight to the organization, to the
sure.
program.
Yeah, exactly. But
without advocating either way, this formation could take pressure off of the regular CACD budget to be heads and beds focused because the hoteliers would have you know, so much say over so much portion of the budget that we might be able to fund things that we haven't been able to fund because our budget would be that much larger. So it could allow for a little bit of programming outside of our normal activities to support some of the other sectors of the economy. It doesn't have to, but that could be a way of helping support things.
The downtown mall being the historic district now, I mean, it could be an arts and culture district too. That could kind of, you know, maybe have more leverage that way. Something like this.
Yeah.
Tiffany, out of curiosity, have you had anybody non-renew or end their TID, or do you have 100% success rate?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there are two cases, maybe three, of non-renewal. So when, kind of go back, so this started in 1990, and at the time, most DMOs were subsections of chambers. There's a lot of chamber organizations that had tourism, and since then there's been an evolution from there, and tourism has kind of sectored off. So the couple of cases where it hasn't been wildly successful has been where the governance model kind of used the money for more chamber-like activities and less room night generation activities, and the hotels decided that it wasn't benefiting them. In our book, that means the mechanism was successful because it means that the benefit has to be received and that the industry has to support it. And so where it's not working for an industry, and it's not desired and or not supported by votes, we think that that is a success as well.
You do have the rights under this to cancel it if you choose to. So if two or three years in, we've determined that it's not working the way it was intended, you have the ability to go back and petition, and you can actually cancel it. So it's not something that you're wedded to for 10 years. And by the way, it doesn't have to be 10 years. It can be 5 years or whatever. But you do have the ability to stop doing it.
Hotels have to.
Yes. Yeah, it'd be a vote of the same people who have opted in, the ones who have signed the petition, who come back and say, hey, this is not working for us. We'd like to get out of it. So.
Tiffany, you mentioned that Richmond landed on 2%. Was there a lot of discussion, or is that just decided that's the right amount? Or what kind of range do you see in the amounts typically in the assessment?
The average is around 2%. Of course, it's relative to how much that would raise. And so it's usually the discussion is around how much do we need to raise to have an impact? And then what does that look like in terms of an assessment? So in Florence, Alabama, their assessment will be 4%. And that's because it's only going to raise $1 million. 4% will only raise about $1 million, and they need that $1 million. So the hotels are willing to do that. In Philadelphia, the assessment is 0.75%. So it depends, but 0.75% Philadelphia raises $10 million. It's different. So 2% is average, but I think it's relative to what you need and how it will impact your overall tax rate on your guest room folio and how that relates to your competitive set. And so we go through all of that. That's quite it's a big exercise that we go through as a group to determine what the right point is for the industry.
Do you have any perspective on the ratio of CACBB budget to TID budget? Should one be bigger than the other?
Sure. Yeah, we have, well, Richmond is probably a really good example. Their main budget is significantly larger than their TID. I would say most of the districts that I form, it's pretty even. If the DMO budget is $2 million, the formation of the TID usually looks similar. But the revenue stream is meant to be supplemental, so whatever the need is usually what the TID is. Also, the geography dictates that to some degree. There's no rule, though.
Okay.
In Portland, Maine, the DMO budget is $500,000 because it's 100% membership. There's no bed tax contribution. Their TID is $3 million. Their TID is bigger than the DMO budget.
Just out of curiosity, the question of like pushback and percentages and things like that. Like, we obviously talk a lot about affordability being a concern last time. Is it safe to assume that the goal here is increase occupancy rates, which allows you to level off or decrease the average price per night or something along those lines? Like, how would you speak to the affordability question, I think, in terms of, like, how does this not just make it worse? As we're talking about what percentages make sense or don't make sense.
Yeah. Is there questions for me?
I think it's probably not. Like you were saying, the last meeting,
yeah.
You mentioned that, like, if we can get more
weeknight. As a hotel advocate, I can tell you that less rate is not a good thing for the hotel industry. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the recent numbers for Charlottesville, obviously, you know, 2022 and part of 2023 was phenomenal. Your rates went way up. So a lot of that in the past 6 months, that has tapered off considerably in terms of where that's at. And you've also had new product opening with the Forum, and you're going to have more new product opening. So, you know, some of that is what sort of, you know, stabilizes the market a little bit. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, in the hotel industry, room rate is what pays the bill. Occupancy does not necessarily pay the bill. So higher occupancy doesn't always relate to more, you know, more. So I mean, I think trying to balance that. And really, right now, when you look at the overall, I mean, I get reports for the whole state. You're not very far out of whack in terms of room rates versus that. Now, you'll have peaks, you know, it's a football game.
I think that's what the availability question is driven by the Saturday night football weekend, and it's astronomical compared to an average room rate.
Sure. Right? Like, some of that won't change, and some of it could. If, you know, I would say if I knew that I could run a higher occupancy Sunday through Thursday, I wouldn't feel the immense pressure to squeeze the extra $100 a night out of a Saturday night that I would, you know what I mean, now, because I'm running 10% on a Monday night and I know I have the demand on a Saturday. You know, like, so some of it won't change ever, right? Fall weekends in Charlottesville might never go down again. But other times, absolutely, I believe, could.
Well, as Richmond did, they spent money to spread the demand. You know, they consciously said, we're going to put money here so that we can get more Monday through Thursday business,
right,
because that's not our priority. And so, again, it's all on what the plan is. Yeah, that may be the plan, that we say, we're going to try to get more groups to come here, you know, Monday through Thursday, and we're going to invest in that. So, again, I think that's part of what you do in the exercise of where do I, you know, what's the priority for us as a region.
I guess you can make affordability a selling point on that issue too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, groups come and go wherever they're, you know, in some cases it's what can I afford. You know, take a state association as an example. You know, they move around depending on the day of the week and what the rate is and whether they can afford it.
Look at the stadium when there's no football.
And looking at your six regions, I imagine the hotel rates are different in different regions.
Yeah, Richmond has a weird thing. Their per diem rate in Richmond proper is different than their per diem rate in the surrounding counties. Mm-hmm. The counties are much lower. They're the normal rate.
Same here.
Yeah. Same sort of thing. So it is a little bit, you know, that way. But in their case, Chesterfield, which is one of the larger counties, has a huge outdoor athletic facility that they've invested in. They actually own it now. But then Henrico built the other one, and then Richmond has some. So each of them have different assets that help the overall. So they're pretty unique in that way.
But I think it's fair to say, to Brad's point, he was asking about affordability from a guest perspective, they're going to pay more. The guests are paying this bill.
That's right.
And to the extent that Charlottesville has a knock on it as being unaffordable to visit, to do anything, this is not going to make it better, necessarily. I'm not speaking against the idea or for it at the moment. But it's not going to make that piece any better. It's only going to make it worse. You're paying your 8% already, plus 2% or 1% or $2, whatever it is. It's going to be an addition. So the guest is going to pay more. It may benefit the community in that you can do more. You can attract more groups to the midweek. You can do a sports facility. You can do lights. You can do security. You can do other things that are going to benefit the community with that money. But the guest is going to pay. I think we all should be aware of that.
Yeah, that seems like the most obvious knock against it, mm-hmm. as we just had the conversation about affordability, and we're trying to get out ahead of what are the negative potential impacts of the conversations that we're going to have. That feels like the biggest one.
And were you trying to ask whether having this creation gives the incentive to the Russes to have a better bargain for the midweek because of the existence?
I was just trying to see, is there a simple answer to that question of does this or does this not have any direct impact?
No simple answer.
The affordability question.
Yeah. Rates don't go down much.
Well, and I think
now potentially it could spur additional hotel development, which is what used. I mean, it's a supply demand thing in terms of hotel business. So if you have, you know, if you were really doing well, you may have the construction of additional new facilities that will locate here, or, you know, depending on what they want to do.
Does the parallel conversation with TOT rates have any bearing from your perspective? I mean, everyone's perspective, but I'm kind of looking at you. is the timing good or bad or indifferent? Because it's different. I'm curious what your perspective on that is.
Well, it's interesting.
I'll comment. Generally, it's not a good thing.
Yes.
Because it's hard to do both. Once you sort of get to a high level with your 17% or 18%, you get back to the affordability thing that happens when they're not able. That's a bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
As an industry, one of the reasons that the hotel industry is as supportive as we are of this is we do believe that it's designed to generate, whereas TOT taxes go wherever they go.
Understood.
And this does sort of focus on the generation of additional.
But it's the conversations have to happen concurrently. You have to look at total affordability, and that is the total tax that comes below the rate is an important figure.
Well, I don't think affordability is just about hotel rates.
Right. Sure, it's everything.
Everything. Yeah. So if we don't have to raise some of those other taxes because we don't need as much money in the budget here, like it's a little.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would love for the meals tax rate to not have to go up at some point in the same way, and if this is a way to support that effort, then that's great.
Has the creation in Richmond and Henrico impacted the TOT in that area? Has there been discussion about changing it in any direction because of this?
No, there has not been. I mean, they look at it as a way, and each jurisdiction there has their own sort of strategy, but they have, again, because they have this unique structure that funded their convention center, a lot of them sort of had an agreement that they would not change their TOT taxes as a result of that. So that's the reason they said it the way they did. Now, not all six of those fund that convention center, but the big counties do, and city. So there hasn't been any discussion about that at all in terms of sort of raising the TOT taxes as well.
Armin, or saying lowering it.
Well, again,
I know that's a pipe dream, but
yeah, no, I'd like to see one of those.
Well, I know we've kept Ms. Gallagher for a little bit longer than we had originally planned, but I think the discussion was really fruitful. Are there any last comments that we can ask of Tiffany? And I also know we've got some of Jay's food waiting for us as well that we've been smelling this entire time. And this was really just an informative session. This is not a vote. We're not doing any of that right now. But really to just get the ball rolling on what this could look like and how it could positively impact the DMO, but also Charlottesville. But some of these other things that you just brought up, taxes, all those things we have to look at, there's obviously some discussion right now happening in both the city and the county about those taxes, meals and TOT. So, any other questions for Tiffany? All right. Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We'll be in
touch.
Have a
good day.
Bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. See ya. All right. With that, I guess I took over the agenda. I don't know that I had the agenda.
Yeah. So we can't adjourn until we leave, but we can take public comment or do board now.
Okay. Public comment?
Well, I would just say that, Emily, to your question, I'm on the airport commission right now representing the city. And as you look at the rental car issue, there's the rental car rate, and then there's taxes affiliated with it, and most times the airports have a rider on top of that as part of its ability to collect funds to operate. And it's a discussion that happens all the time. Once there's a kind of tipping point of rates where you say, well, I'm paying this much for the car, but I'm paying this much for fees, it's a sensitive issue. And you kind of have to be mindful of what the market will bear with the sensitivities of the customers. And who's paying for it, too? Like, guests come into Charlottesville who are coming here for business or groups, they look at the total cost. And it doesn't matter if it's rate or taxes, it's the total cost. And so attracting group business, the total cost is the bottom line. And so just ramping up TOT and adding this and adding sales tax and this and that and another percent that, cumulatively, that gets to be a point where everybody has to say, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that your group meeting funders pay a lot of attention to that. They're the ones who really say, look, I've got X dollars allocated to this, and if my taxes go up in this area or that area, then I'm going to move it to some other jurisdiction that doesn't have that sort of structure. Mm-hmm.
And we're already kind of in a handicap because we are in more, compared to our peers, a little bit more expensive. And cost labor, and so the taxes does have an impact.
Did I hear the guidance is stay under 20%?
You've got a lot of headway if that's what it is.
Where it's approached 20%, Chris, is usually in places like, I'll use Houston. I used to live in Houston. Houston used it to fund the expansion of the convention center and actually a convention hotel that was adjacent to that. So they're like, I think they're actually a little over 20%, like 20.5%, but it's very focused on the convention center, which drives tremendous demand for Houston that way. So it usually is tied, when it gets up to that level, it should be tied to some kind of a real big demand generator, like a convention center or something along those lines.
Not just driving the general fund.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I said 20%, so there's sales tax plus the lodging tax, so we're not that far from 20%.
You're right.
Everyone should know.
Yeah, you've got to put it all in.
So all in. So there's a little room for TID to stay under 20, but not a lot.
If I can say, I appreciate you guys letting me sort of speak today, and I'm happy to come back up at any point if you have questions or have some additional information. I've already, just so you all know, I've already had some preliminary discussion with some of the hotel owners, just because, again, you want to make sure that there's support for it. If you decide to go that route, and I have had some discussion with a few of those folks, so anything we can do to help support the discussion, I'm happy to do that. So, and again, I represent both hotels and restaurants and attractions and everything, so I kind of wear all hats. And I apologize, I'll get back to the
Alright, any other board announcements? Alright, well, we can't adjourn, but we can't have food. And the food is just inside the secret door over there, so feel free to help yourself. So, and people can leave, and then we can adjourn, and it could be one person. Is that right? Or how does that work? Okay.
All right. So one thing I was wondering.
Yeah, if you're high risk, then if you eat lunch together, you will talk about business together.
Yeah.
Which would be a violation of FOIA if we adjourn the meeting.
Yeah. Right.
Is the be normal a command?
Or be weird.
Okay, thank you.
Just don't violate FOIA. I have to move a bunch of meetings.
Somebody got, I saw it in the paper somewhere, somebody got fired.
We think you guys are going
to. A whistleblower on a FOIA request. I want to
Because they got fired for
economics. You guys are
trying to get the FOIA request. We're not raising any. Well, we didn't recommend the raising.
I will look that up. Yeah, I was like,
well,
they
probably haven't made any decisions yet because nothing
generally. We're right.
Okay.
say it. Not on football.
Not just football.
Yeah.
This is more in the fall and spring.
That's right. All right. I got to scoot. Thanks. I'll shoot you a note. Thank you.
Eric, thanks for coming. Good to see
you. Yeah, thanks. It's good to see you.
See ya.
I will read that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
See ya. I'll send that.
You're welcome. I have another name.
Yeah.
It's downstairs, right, like right inside the entrance.
We just got a space coordinator now, so
thank you.
I don't have to work. So that's really good. If you need like a supply, like some equipment to help you, if you want
to. I guess you have to like sign in. Reserve a space to work.
You can come in. But let's say you want to reserve space. You want to tour the space. You're looking for people. You don't know where it's at.
I'd be happy to like dedicate space to have something.
If
you have any like takeaways that people can have when they're there at the
I am. I'm supposed to like, I think almost 6 months ago, bring you a good flyer. I need to. But this is the benefit of having somebody now that's dedicated. So a lot of the time, it just gets opened up.
You're
going to
go
to Stanford. So, that's been good. Just now, just kind of waiting around to hear back from Branson season. Kind of start like a fellowship and residency program. So.
Oh, that's cool. Do you work with the Four Records at all?
We have an Airstream. And so they rent that to use for their
So, Francois, you're at the Draftsman?
Yeah, the Draftsman, yeah. I also own a restaurant, local restaurant, called Molly, in Belmont.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't been there yet.
You should try it.
Yeah, it's in the old, some of the barbecue place.
The barbecue stop. Yep.
And that's fairly new, like 2 years maybe?
No, it's we opened in September of 2019, so right before the pandemic.
Like 5 years.
5 years, yeah, close to 5 years, yeah. That was an interesting time, perfect timing.
Yeah, right.
I was just like, you see how old I look now?
Okay, so you're doing both. Wow, you're busy.
Yeah, and we just recently purchased the building as well. So we are like trying to get back to compliance with the because it wasn't in compliance with the development plan and.
If you don't want to city, then you're out that online.
Oh, no, they know. No. Yeah, very, very honest.
I don't do that.
No, you don't.
You can tell me. They'll work with you if you're willing.
Exactly.
That's a good
which is what we're doing. We're just like, hey, listen, you know, we need additional restrooms and we need to kind of like increase the patios. I mean, anyway, we need to do a few things. I'm like, all right, we're going to get back into compliance now, but we need you to, you know, the patio will be second phase. And, you know.
Yeah.
And they're actually like, they're working with us.
There's a line of existing and what you can do and what theoretically
correct
you need to do. You know, and that, it takes.
I never got into the
takes everybody working on it.
I'm not very good at the quality repetition. I can give you one good print, but like, if you want 20 of them, you think that way.
Might take 50 tries to get
them.
More of a command
keyframe,
you know?
Yeah.
Left,
photo
it's a question of, I overheard you talking to Bee at the time of a similar
funny, so I think ask Eric, like, if someone is interested in meeting the mayor, I think that would have more weight on Tuesday.
So,
chastising you?
Sorry for you.
No, you guys should try and get that set up.
Definitely that, and I think he might be interested in reporting.
Is that what he's coming for?
Yeah.
Is it? It's now actively being.
I think so.
Told, right?
I mean, like last night, they had five of the dozen.
Oh yeah.
You should
just
go help him screen
print
everyone.
I mean. Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Sorry.
No. All that place needs, I'm telling you, you put like a Hilton flag on it, because there's no Hilton in that area. Cool, like a Curio or a Tapestry or something like that. Easier brands.
Raise your parking.
A lot of like,
people
stay
21 seats. 21 seats. Really?
It's only 80 rooms. You need to feel them every night. You can't just.
I'm wondering if you're going to have like a sign on 29.
We can't do it. Yeah. Did you really like building something here where actually have an impact?
What?
Like using like the CID would to actually like.
The guy was very.
I don't know. I think we would have
to. I'm more into like a festival kind of thing and just like promoting it, and I think it would like be easier for the sales too, because you would really like help not only just hotels but like restaurants and like a whole bunch of like local businesses.
I could see us spending, you know, 250,000-300,000 partnering with Travel and Leisure and doing a food and wine festival in March. And we need this, and we need the occupancy. Not
I mean, they're informative.
No, over, you know what? Over graduation.
Nobody likes
it. It'll be great.
Hey. My graduation ADR this year is going to be lower than most of my other weekends.
Why?
I do.
We didn't. You probably.
What do you
probably
mean?
Still
mean?
You?
No.
From a year ago, when you set the rate for graduation, wasn't high enough.
Are you kidding me?
I got rates on there at $500 a night.
Oh no, that wasn't.
That's right.
I'm blaming you. I'm blaming you.
Hell no. Well, you can blame me all you want.
You were here a year ago. Right?
Yeah, a year ago, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was you.
Fucking Ambrosia.
That was you, Francois. You probably already knew you were leaving. You're like, oh, just sit in a row so I can beat their ass.
And that's what the city...
Are you talking to John?
Is that why you're
here? He said he was buying them.
That's where it's true.
We're going next door. The site where everybody's lying about everything.
Yeah.
How is the Birdwood Mansion?
Good. It's going to take a while. It'll be really hard to see. Yes, you can. There's plenty of food in there.
I didn't talk as much as I usually do before meetings. I'm not sure.
Oh, you earn it every day.
Yeah, I'm excited for Tuesday.
Is your HR person joining?
Hell no. She's going to stay away.
So this is the same lady?
Yeah, she's the same one. Same house. It goes from the same two people.
In the restaurant?
Yeah. No, one of them used to work at the desk. She knew that, she was about to get canned. She transferred over to Ridley, which has been a pain in everybody's ass. Anyway.
Why don't you deal with it with their manager?
I do. The manager changes every 2 months. So when he never gets up. That's like my boss this morning. So, we're talking about something else. And I was like, yeah, Sherry. I'm like, have you heard the latest one? I thought that's what you were calling this. Like, what? I'm like, I harassed the Ridley team members. What? Yeah, you should ask Ariel. What happened? I'm like, I told her. She came in, and actually it was Jeffrey and I at the desk. Anyway, long story short, it was funny. She came in, sweatpants, flip-flops, little shirt, no name tag, and she's like, hey, I need you guys to reopen whatever room. I'm like, I'm sorry? I'm like, Bridget, let's redo that entire interaction. Everything is wrong. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, everything is wrong. Good morning, how are you doing? Great, I'm fabulous. How can I help you? Are you a guest or are you a team member? She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, right now, I couldn't tell. Jeffrey, can you tell? I'm literally like, I had to let you. She's like, that was the interaction. I'm like, so I suggest, especially being a supervisor, that you go and before you address, leadership or anyone, you should not be on the floor like this. And you should go, get your uniform, get a name tag on. Would you do it again? I'm like, absolutely. Did you change anything? Absolutely not. I would do the exact same thing all over again. And it's very sad that I am the only one that's actually doing my job. You would have flipped.
That's funny.
No, but it's like, it's not just the first time, it's just constant. I'm like, how many times? And then she's one that, valet, so we valet the cars and stuff, even for the employees. The only people allowed to self-park their cars in the garage are salaried managers. Right? And also do it, pay for Ridley staff to go and get valet.
A little bit more than that.
She just parks herself. She parks herself into like truck spots and whatever, and she doesn't want anyone to touch her car because of her insurance. And I'm like, no, this is not how it works.
You can go fancy.
You don't get to get it's the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. I've seen them here for a while. You don't like it. So now, I think I'm going to double down and I'm going to send a memo to all of them, to the managers of the relay. And I'm going to literally go to them. I take great pleasure in towing my car next time.
Well, you only have 90 spots in there, right? Or something like that?
79 or something.
And you're taking a portion of them for yourself, for your staff?
Mm-hmm. And Ridley and the customers, it's a very nice place. So
what is your contract with Ridley State? Like, how many do you have to give them?
None. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm doing this out of the... And on top of it, in your own exclusive. I'm like, you don't like it, though? You can find off-street parking.
What?
It's this. And especially the whole point is, you know, like when it's very busy, you know, the valet, they go fast, right? And it's just like around the curve, everyone is like triple parked. And like most of the time, you know, like starting on the fourth floor, when we have events and Ridley and it's a sold out night, not only can we not fit enough SUVs, but they have to triple park the cars. So it takes one person with a car that doesn't park into like a truck, that parks into a truck spot, or they don't have the keys, and then they can't park in front, then it's a mess. I mean, it's literally like, I'm not saying that just to say, hey.
Yeah.
I had dinner with Chris. I had dinner with Jennifer last night. Roger's Jennifer. Yeah. She's doing well.
How's that coming about?
See ya.
You're just checking in. You guys are buds.
Yeah, I mean, we've hung out those handful of times. And then they came to New Year's, and she's like, well, we don't have to have Roger around to hang out. I was like, okay. Yeah, she's fine. She's good. She's good. Yeah. She said Roger's happy there professionally, but that he doesn't have a social group yet, so he's been feeling a little. Yeah, it is, and he has family there, so they take some of his time away. He's taking care of his dad and stuff.
Yeah. Like, is he still back and forth every weekend?
Every other weekend, yeah.
She go down there sometimes?
She goes down there when she doesn't have the kids. She works from there, so that's a nice thing.
I feel like he said he was buying a house.
They bought a house.
Down there?
Yeah, yeah, okay. So they have two houses.
Ooh, all right.
A lot. Yeah. Okay. Good. But I told him that I told her to tell him that we missed him and that. So I spoke for you.
There's no comparison to Bear.
I mean, I didn't want to get too far into that, but
I'll let it.
We can let it go separately.
I'll let it.
Thank you, Rod.
You're welcome.
Good. Good seeing you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Stay in touch.
Yep. Sounds good.
Alrighty.
Yeah, fun.
Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yes. Yeah.
Good to see you.
Always good to meet you.
See you later.
We'll be seeing
you. Oh, man. I don't remember who this person is. So.
You can still get your stuff every now and then.
It's all in here. Oh, interesting.
No, it gets in our mailbox.
Yeah.
A lot of it's junk. So that's where we get to you guys, but.
Thank you.
And that actually just came today. I was walking out of the church.
Really good service. Yeah, thank you. Very much.
I expect a tip or something.
Yeah. How about lunch?
No.
I'll give you a drink. How about that?
Yes, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll do that. Yeah. All right.
See ya. Thank you.
Bye.
I used to get a mystery CSA when I was.
It's something that I don't think.
When I worked at World Wildlife Fund, which you can imagine, had a lot of buy-in. And I started calling it the bag of tricks because I wouldn't know what to do with it.
You wouldn't even know what's on the
box. What is this thing? And
My parents cooked a lot growing up. They always start rotting in the corner. And I was living with another WWF employee, and she's also doing it.
Five bushels of kale and two carrots, and you'd be like, oh, okay.